now to your regularly scheduled program.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Martin.
And I'm Marty Hyde.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the Tattoos and Jesus Podcast.
I am very happy to be here!
Here at TNJ, we seek to blend the righteous with the ridiculous.
Please explain.
We discuss coffee, counseling, Christianity, and whatever else crosses our mind.
We hope you enjoy it.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back everybody to another stellar edition of Tattoos and Jesus. Here with your host Marty Hyde and co-host Joshua Martin.
What's happening? What's
not
popping?
Much. I have some exciting news.
What's that?
Can you guess? Can you guess? Can you guess? You can't guess. So today, It was a couple months ago that I talked about having cancer on the podcast. Did I talk about that?
Probably.
Did you know I used to have cancer?
Yeah, we've talked about it.
Okay. I had it for 24 hours, knowingly. Anyway, today, so on Monday, I had my CAT scan, my annual CAT scan, and then today I go to and saw Dr. Humanick, my oncologist, and he has cleared me completely. I don't have to go back.
Oh, congrats.
I am.
It's a big deal.
100% clear. He said the chances of the cancer that I had reoccurring at this point is like virtually zero, is what he said. So basically, I have the same risk of developing cancer, basically, as like you do.
Nice.
Like normal amount.
Well,
he said the only thing is just because my body, for whatever reason, allowed cancer to develop, then it's also possible that I just need to monitor the other, just continue to be aware. Because it's possible that for whatever reason my body creates that condition, but chances look the previous cancer coming back is like zero. So
congratulations.
Just be alert and aware.
Congratulations. I was not aware of that prior to our conversation. I would have never guessed that.
I know you wouldn't have. No, I know you wouldn't have.
I was gonna ask if you got like a new tattoo or something.
No. I want one, but nah. I can't afford one. I got no money right now.
Broke as a joke.
Yeah. I mean, broke. You said it.
So big news.
For you?
No.
Oh, we're still talking about me?
No, not you either. Well, yeah, both of us, really.
What's your big news?
We are recording with David.
Oh, yeah.
So
I didn't know what you were going
to say. We don't know when it's going to drop.
Yeah.
But we are recording right after we record this podcast. We are recording with our good friend David Armin on his podcast for his podcast.
I don't know about you, but I have really appreciated some of the feedback I've gotten from our podcast with David, which dropped 2 weeks ago, right? Numbers are through the roof. So people have really enjoyed it. I've had several people tell me they've listened to it multiple times. And so what I really appreciated, I had one friend of mine who I will not name, but we dedicated a show to him a couple weeks ago.
all right.
He sent me some like pushback, which I appreciated. He was like, but how about this? And how about this? And so I really appreciated that. And then I had somebody else text me and was extremely complimentary. Like, it was like, yeah, I don't agree. Like, I can't get on the same page. He said, I'm buying the book. He said, I'm going to go check this guy out.
Yeah.
He said his approach, his demeanor, his attitude, and his thoughtful laying out of scripture, he challenged him. And so that's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool.
That's all we hope for. Engage your minds.
Yeah. We're just trying to create a bunch of postmodern free thinkers.
That's sure.
So we can go to hell and come out the other side of heaven.
We're about to get canceled in the South right now. Oh man.
Anyway, shame on you for saying that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of crazy how much this topic has kind of opened up a lot of discussions.
Yeah. I've had patients come in my office and say, hey, I listened to that podcast of yours, and we have like, you know, a 10-minute conversation about it, which is weird. It's weird when you have a patient come in and that you do not know listens to your podcast.
Yeah. True.
Because I don't hide it. I mean, I've got it posted.
I mean, we got our nice anime characters over here.
Anyway, what's new in your world? Anything exciting? Okay. Well, nice.
Life just got back from the beach a couple weeks ago. I am currently getting pumped about spring break coming up and summer break. You're going to have to pin me down for summer break.
You're going to be AWOL, aren't you?
I'm going to be all over the place.
Do we need to record in the morning so that you have the rest of the day to yourself?
I'd love to record in the mornings because I will be fully alert.
We can make that shift.
Yeah, I'm down.
I'm flexible.
Outside of that, I got nothing. No interesting facts about Josh.
Well, then let's not waste any time here. Uninteresting Josh.
Right. Outside of the
question.
Give me,
you had a thought for today. You were...
So I'll do a generic of how we led into this.
Yeah, you can't give a specific example.
So I was thinking through a few things, I don't know, maybe a month ago. Wrote it down, saved it. This was right before we did our interview with David, and it led into some back-to-back things. But the topics for our listeners out there, conviction, shame, guilt.
Conviction, shame, and guilt.
Are topics that come up regularly in spiritual Christian circles.
Yeah.
As well as counseling circles. Because people experience these things.
There's a lot of crossover there.
Yeah. And so I've been really, and we've talked about this, but I've been really stuck on seeing other people's side of things. Like placing myself in every situation and challenging myself to see if I make a different decision.
So you're saying like you're trying to do that more. Like you're struggling to put yourself in other people's shoes?
No, I'm doing that all the time.
You're trying to put yourself in other
people's
shoes? Yeah,
I'm almost to a fault to where I'm defending everything that maybe shouldn't be defended.
You're like the most empathetic human in the world right now.
Right, which I like almost to a point to where, and this is kind of where the conversation will go, but... To where it's like I gotta reel back some and understand a sense of accountability and responsibility.
So let me ask you a question. Do you feel like in life you often become reactionary? Like when you believe something and then all of a sudden you decide, no, this is not it, that your tendency is to go to the other extreme?
I don't know. It depends on what it is.
Because you were like... When we were talking about, I'm trying to think here, when we were going through the hell episodes, and you're like, when I first kind of like, when my faith first came alive, like I went hardcore towards Reformed theology. Like you just went to an extreme. And then you live there for a while, but then when that started to shatter, you've like launched the other direction. Like you got no chill mode.
I go, if I'm going to care about something, I want to go all in on something.
You go hard in the paint.
But at the same time, I know my tendency is all in and then maybe see where... If I'm all in on this side and I go all in on this side, it usually at some point will come to a
whiplash?
Some of a balance.
Does it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's come to a balance or come to a point unless I'm just extremely convicted.
Oh, my goodness.
About something.
I think it's just a symptom of ADHD. And I mean, you just chase fixations.
That, I mean, there's a tendency there for it.
Tendency.
There's a tendency for it.
So, you know what? You want to know something funny? I think I may have already told you this. Ashley's going to kill me for saying this on the air. But when we were doing some research, about, it may have been the hell stuff. I don't know. But I was like, yeah, Josh is like totally, he's like dove in. He's been reading a bunch of books. He's been studying. And he's like, really over here now. And she goes, give it 3 months. She goes, I'm ADHD too. She said, it'll wear off.
Yeah.
It'll come back.
Yeah. But, and you told me that, and I could see that on 75% of what I do. But it's like, it's not, that in particular is not going.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to get out of that.
The Clippers. The Chargers,
oh, yeah.
And eschatology.
Yeah, the Clippers, the Chargers, and Universal Christian Universalism. That's my three go tos here.
That's your
okay. All right,
we can put Sarah up there too.
Yeah.
Put Sarah,
yeah, for sure. Just as far as like thoughts.
All right, so
back to
yeah.
All right, so let me pose you a question.
Pose me a question.
The thought was, I was researching some stuff on the cartel, probably one of my ADHD moments. And
Exhibit A.
Right. And, you know, if you're stuck in a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like if you're listening right now, you can't see or talk through just your lens or your worldview when you determine certain things. For example, if you're in the cartel, if your family's in the cartel, you can't get out. There's no escaping the cartel if that is a part of your culture and your lifestyle.
Put mob, mafia,
right?
Any of those.
Any of those things.
Like illegal crime rings.
Right. And you got kids in this thing.
Yeah. Blood in, blood out kind of
right.
thing.
Right. You are taught this is the lifestyle. Obviously, there's going to be a difference in what I'm personally convicted, quote unquote, by.
Yeah.
And that they are, quote unquote, convicted by.
Right. Like if I accidentally just broke a dude's arm.
Right.
I would feel horrible.
Right.
They're like, that's nothing. Give me a machete.
Right. I mean, it's.
Like they wouldn't even bat an eye.
It wouldn't bat an eye for certain. Like, mm-hmm. their levels of conviction. So if I'm lying, and I feel bad about it, and then you have somebody who's around a lot, you know, a lot greater evils, I guess you could say, in the world, and then you try to come at them about lying, they're gonna look at you like you're an idiot. Because they're like, bro, lying is not on my table.
Lying is my truth.
Right. And so it reminds me of
what's your question?
We'll talk about later. Is conviction or shame and guilt in the same sentence taught or natural for either all things or certain things? We can talk about that. So is conviction something that we all have at every level, and that is attached to shame, it's attached to guilt? Like, I feel guilty, and this person feels guilty.
Everybody feels guilty.
Or if this person's convicted about something, and I'm looking at, because I'm starting to notice that I'm doing this myself. This person's severely convicted about this certain thing, and I'm over here like, bro, I'm not at all.
Let it go.
Convicted
it go.
By what you're talking about, and I feel pretty confident that I am seeking God in what I'm trying to do. How are we landing on different aspects?
You're seeking a different God than everybody else. I think we've
established what they would say. That's what they would say. So then it just got me thinking, like, where is conviction lie in this spiritual aspect and in the psychological aspect?
I think we almost need to clarify a few things, because when we say conviction, are you talking about biblical conviction? Like, I'm convicted that Scripture is informing this in my life, or the Holy Spirit is impressing this, and I'm acting against it, and I'm having conviction. Versus, you know, in just modern language, we'll say that man has strong convictions. Which what we're really just saying is he has strong beliefs or strong morals. So are we talking more of a spiritual conviction?
When I say conviction, it's more spiritual, like convicted that I'm doing something wrong,
right? Like I become under,
or that somebody else is doing something wrong.
Okay,
and then shame and guilt's more universal. Because I think that's tied to those things.
Yes.
But, yeah, conviction specifically spiritual in the sense of I'm convicted I'm doing something wrong. I'm convicted that they're doing something wrong.
I don't know the best way to kind of go about this. But, okay, so to clarify, it's kind of like a triangle. So on one hand, we have conviction, which we just talked about, right? Which is just kind of that internal awareness that I feel like I'm acting against the morals, beliefs, or ethics that I should be in this moment, or somebody else is, and I'm aware of it, and it's bothering me. Guilt is the acknowledgement or the realization that I did cross a line, right? Whether you call it sin or the legal law or whatever it is, like you either did or you didn't do it, right? That's guilty. It's a legal term. And then shame is more of the emotional state of feeling. What? Like, it's because shame is more of an emotional state. So conviction is like an awareness. Guilt is a matter of fact statement, and shame is more of an emotional statement. But how would you define shame?
So for me, I feel like shame is unhealthy.
Okay. That's not a definition, Josh.
So for me, shame, in my mind, shame is unhealthy. Guilt can be healthy if it leads to change. Shame is a demeanor about yourself that is negative to its core. Like, I am a terrible person.
I'm glad you realize.
Is what I'm kind of thinking is shame.
So shame would be like a negative emotional state of thinking that I am somehow lesser than as a result of
an action or behavior. Yeah.
Like of a guilty, of being guilty or being something.
Being convicted, guilty, something. Yes.
Okay.
Shame is the outcome of conviction at times. And I don't think if it's a healthy conviction, it's supposed to produce an unhealthy reaction, if that makes sense.
I feel like shame should be the last thing we talk about here, not the first thing we talk about here.
Well, let's talk about the first thing.
But I think shame is inevitable. I don't think shame is bad.
A painful feeling of humiliation.
Yeah. That's it? That's it?
Well, yeah, that's what it says. That's the Webster, the Oxford.
You went gusto into that like it was going to be
Oxford
a whole sentence.
Oxford says a painful feeling of humiliation.
Okay.
Another definition could be distress caused by a consciousness of wrong or foolish behavior. Okay.
So I like the word humiliation as a synonym. I think that's good. I think shame is inevitable. And I say that as someone who I am not a big fan of people feeling shame. Mm-hmm. Because I think we use it in an unhealthy manner.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go back to Genesis chapter 3. See, I studied. If you go back to Genesis chapter 3, right? And so this in this scenario that paints out, literal, metaphorical, right? There's this picture that's painted that there is the tempter that comes to Adam and Eve. And their response, they eat the fruit, yada, yada. They become aware of their nakedness. And then when they hear Jesus walking in the garden, what do?
They hide.
They hide. Why?
Because they feel shameful.
Because they felt shameful.
Right.
And so I would say shame didn't exist prior to Genesis 3 because there's nothing you can be humiliated about because they were living in perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Shame is the outcome of there being good and bad. Here's where I get skewed is every culture has come up with their own rules as to what's good and what's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's connected to biblical truths that they're like, this is good and bad because scripture informs it, like murder. Universally, across almost every, like I can't think of a single group of people where the just the pointless killing of a person is okay, right? Now, I'm not talking about punishment. I'm not talking about capital punishment or in retaliation or whatever, but just ruthless killing, right? That's a universal principle. It's also a biblical principle. But then there's also other cultural beliefs, like how should men and women cut their hair? What clothes should they wear? What's the role of a man? What's the role of a woman? How do we speak to each other? You know, what taboo topics, taboo words, like there's other things that go beyond biblical truth, but they define a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so like ever since Genesis chapter 3, there's been this this growing conceptualization across cultures of in my culture, whether that's a church culture, a family culture or like a country of like what is right and wrong. And that's where I struggle with shame because we often use shame as a form of peer pressure almost to manipulate the audience, right? To manipulate the masses. We use societal constructs to basically humiliate people into conformity. And I don't think that's healthy. On the flip side, peer pressure is not completely bad. We use it in sports all the time, right? If you're playing on a team and one person's acting a fool, a coach will say, we are one team and we represent everyone. We must hold everyone accountable. Therefore, Johnny over here decided to go out and be a fool last night. So everyone on the team's running, right? And so in that, not only does hopefully Johnny be like, okay, I got to get my crap together because I don't want other people to suffer for my actions, but the team is going to say, bro, you got to keep your crap together. And when they hear that he's going to go be a fool, they're going to say, no, man, we're going to hold you accountable because there's a culture that we've created and there's behaviors that are acceptable and there's behaviors that aren't acceptable. And they're using that conformity to better humanity. And I would say in some ways that's it's shaming in that we're saying, listen, it's a shame if you choose to act outside of the culture that we've created. And so you need to get on board with us. Is that bad?
I'm still going to go, yeah.
How?
I'm still going to go, yeah.
How?
Because going back to your Genesis 3 example.
Yeah.
God didn't want them to feel shame even after sinning.
Okay.
So it's a response that we have that God does not want. So that's why I think it's unhealthy. Like, shame is like a unacceptance. I'm not saying this. It's definitely tied to most of those things.
But I might be overstretching the word shame because really it's accountability that I'm talking about.
Accountability. I'm here for accountability.
You're holding the team accountable. You're holding people accountable.
But they shouldn't feel shame.
But we shouldn't humiliate them.
Right, exactly. I don't think you should feel shame.
We're not going to bully.
In accountability.
Using bullying to force conformity. Inappropriate.
Yeah. Right.
Holding people accountable to the rules and consequences thereof, appropriate.
Right. Like, it's okay to be accountable, but there shouldn't be shame felt when there's accountability present.
I'm with you.
Because there's an element of unacceptance there.
It's like, on some level, we're rejecting your personhood.
Your identity,
you're a lesser person
until
you conform.
Right.
All
right.
I'm coming around.
So that's where I'm feeling like where shame is unhealthy is because the response should not be shame. Guilt, maybe. Like, I'm not saying guilt's bad.
Well, guilt's...
It can produce
guilt's
healthy
factual.
Things. Yeah.
Like, again, every culture defines right and wrong. But if you're within that culture, you either do it or you don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, guilt really isn't subjective unless it's we don't know the facts to determine if it happened or not. But on any given thing, there is an ultimate truth. Like, did you speed or did you not speed? Like, it's not subjective. Like, guilt, it tends to be small gray area, very big black or white area.
Yeah. And I think this might go too far into psychology, I guess. But I feel like shame is probably the actual feeling of, my mind goes to, an adolescent who was angry for being called out.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if an adolescent or a teen or really anybody who acts angry or defiant is a popular word or whatever, like, they're pushing back on feeling shame more than they're pushing back on correcting their behavior, if that makes sense. Like, there's a sense of shame behind being corrected.
Yeah.
I guess my thought is it shouldn't be that way. And how do we fix it if we can fix it? Because it's an unhealthy emotion to get to where we're... It's like, just getting in the way of everything.
Well, here's... I guess you make me think, like, why as a culture... And so most people wouldn't realize this, but the United States traditionally has been a shame-based culture, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are different cultures in the world, right? Some are shame-based, some are not.
Right. Honor, shame.
Right?
Yeah.
Honor, shame. Like, there's different... like, China, for example, is a very, very, very extreme version of a shame-based culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you embarrass your family, just go kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, truth, like, to that level.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's incredibly shame-based. But America is, too. Not as an extreme, but it's like, you act outside of this, and we'll treat you as less than.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, if you have strong political opinions, and you find out, you're a Republican? Oh, I think less of you now. That's a shame statement. So I guess my question is... why is there always a tendency in a situation to leverage love instead of just right and wrong? Because I feel like, and parents are guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. Is when someone does something wrong, I immediately use love as the leverage, not just the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, I withdraw my love from that person, mm-hmm. which again is me putting them on a lesser
that acceptance
state.
Is taken away.
Because I think that's what breeds that kid being defiant.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, no, I can't be wrong because you will withdraw your love from me.
Mm-hmm.
You will not view me the same. You will shun me, humiliate me, you know, whatever.
Shame. Yeah,
Even if it's in a small level, that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, where parents will be like, you're not even acting like my son right now. Or, you know, they will use statements that are like mm-hmm. belittling. And I get it. They're trying to prove, they're trying to get through their thick skull.
Mm-hmm.
This is not appropriate behavior. Mm-hmm. And I need you to level up in maturity.
Mm-hmm.
All of that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like all of that, that idea of as you grow up, you're going to have to learn some hard truths and you're going to have to mature
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have to choose whether you want to act right or not. Like, mm-hmm. so I don't necessarily disagree with the intent of parents doing those things, but we leverage love in a shameful way mm-hmm. to try to force conformity.
Mm-hmm. Which is the opposite of what God does in the garden. He walks in, he asks why they feel shameful. And instead of saying,
yeah.
if you paint a different picture, God walks in and says, yeah, y'all better be hiding because you know what you did.
Dude, you're on the verge of a truth bomb. Do you know what it is?
What?
Dude, you are on something strong right now okay. that'll preach.
All right. Which
get
is,
to it.
Do you just keep talking or what?
You don't know what it is?
What do we? I don't know what you're getting at.
When we walk in and we find someone sinning, we withdraw love from them,
mm-hmm.
right? And we humiliate them into either repentance or conformity
mm-hmm.
or rejection and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus walks in the garden. If anyone has the right to shame someone,
mm-hmm.
and Jesus didn't walk in the garden. God walks in the garden,
mm-hmm.
right? If anyone has the right to make them feel less than, because humans are freaking less than God,
mm-hmm.
we are.
Mm-hmm.
It's God himself.
Mm-hmm.
He walks in to where they have done like arguably the worst sin of all time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Was created, yeah.
And he made them close.
Mm-hmm.
He entered into their sin
mm-hmm.
and helped them.
Mm-hmm. Shame was not present in his approach, but it's yeah. what they felt.
And I think that's where, I mean, because to me, that's massive.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought about this. If we walked into a situation and we saw someone crossing a line,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I'm not going to join them in that sin
mm-hmm.
to enable it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I walk into the garden and I realize, you idiots, and they're like, why are you hiding? Because now we know we're naked. Why the frick do you know you're naked? And they're like, well, like, you ain't going to believe this, but it has to do with a snake. And it's really not my fault because it's this trick over here.
Right.
She told me to do it.
Right.
What am I going to do? And be like, are you morons ever going to grow up?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, what are we going to do? Because now I realize I have private parts
mm-hmm.
and they need to be private. And he's going to say, well, then you're going to need to figure that out on your own because mm-hmm. you made this mess.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have to clean it up.
Right.
You made this bed. Now you got to lay in it.
Yep.
Right. Like we got all kinds of cute phrases.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to turn around. I'm going to walk over and I'm going to eat myself a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to watch.
I'm going to watch you fix it.
Flounder.
Right. And we call that maturity.
We call that.
You need to grow up.
You need to face the consequences of your actions.
But they can't do that if the connection, the acceptance, and the love is threatened or taken away.
Yeah.
In a healthy way. They can't do that in a healthy way.
Jesus walks in and says, y'all messed up. And he already knew. Because parents always already know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, all right, you shouldn't have done that. Let me help you pick up the pieces, and then we'll discuss, you know, the consequences,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we see in, what is it, chapter 4, when he lays out really the first ever, is it chapter 5, 17, 4, somewhere, the very first mention of needing a savior happens immediately after that,
mm-hmm.
where he lays out, you know, because you, Satan, the serpent, you will crawl in the belly for the rest of your life. Women, you will struggle in childbirth, and man, you will slave difficultly in the field or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an absence of consequence because they were guilty.
Because mm-hmm. they're producing what they're choosing.
Right. There, it wasn't an absence of consequences, but it was the presence of love despite that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're making me feel right now?
What?
Guilty.
Oh, that's what I'm... At least it's not... If you would have said shameful, then I would walk out.
No, seriously. Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, and I have seen people do this well, right? I have seen people when they walk into the room and the person has got crap face drunk and they're throwing up on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't actually seen this, but like I heard stories
mm-hmm.
where the dad walks in or the mom walks in or the principal walks in or whoever gets on his knees, gets the paper towels and said, "Hey, bud, let's clean this up." Right. It embraces them, metaphorically speaking, in love,
mm-hmm.
helps them with their mess, and then says, "Man, once you're feeling better, come back and let's talk."
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do that? I know naturally that's a struggle, but like just think about yourself. Do you think that would come naturally to you?
To do what?
To do that, to enter in and show that love. Or is your gut reaction to withhold love and be
so,
like, clean up your crap, bro?
But that's kind of what I was saying at the beginning. I'm at a place now where I'm too much of that. Like, I understand it's okay without giving correction, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like accepting too much of the behavior and just allowing it to continue instead of saying and having that balance of, look, you, our relationship is good. I love you no matter what. Like, we are fine. But sometimes I stop short.
Don't say but, say and.
And.
Because but suggests it's not true. It's and.
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. I stop Sorry. Before getting to that point.
Counseling correction.
Yeah. I stop before getting to that point.
Yeah.
Before I even get to, hey, this needs to be corrected because I'm too much that.
Here's my thing. And I'm gonna
Which
honest,
is just as harmful.
I'm not going to be able to give specific examples to protect the innocent. I am so guilty of this all the time. And I don't mean to use guilty since we're talking about it. But like my tendency is when someone acts outside of the way that I want them to act,
mm-hmm.
I immediately withhold love
mm-hmm.
and treat them like they're less than.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do it to my wife. I do it to my sons.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do it to you, Josh. I'm
I
sorry.
Feel, when I said, yeah, I thought about quitting the show.
You felt it?
No, not quite.
Like, I do. I know that. I hate that about, I, you know, as I talk, I hate that about myself. But in the moment,
it feels like the right thing to do.
It doesn't feel like the right thing to do, but it like it's the thing
oh,
that happens.
It's your reaction.
It's the reaction.
I got you.
And there's even times when I'm aware of it, but I can't disengage from it.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Let me give you an answer.
Is that going to be a tricky answer for you right now? Anyway, is that taught or is that natural or is it both?
I think it's both, right? You
like,
have
is it
genetic
taught? Was that
right? Like you have
your
genetic
pattern.
Proclivities in that, like your DNA. Because I mean, there's all
and even
studies,
upbringing, though,
right? Like if I would have been raised by a family in Russia, and at 32 I came and met my parents, I would probably be eerily like both of them.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I watched them live growing up. I watched my aunts and uncles, my grandparents, you know, the people around me live. And the reality is because I share the same genetics, I like what they like, I have the tendencies that they have, and so in watching them, their good and bad habits naturally fit me. So they're naturally more impressionable, I guess, if that mm-hmm. makes sense, right? And so, I mean, freaking both and, man.
Yeah. Let's talk. I mean,
yeah,
because you can't break what you're taught. Like, so that's kind of my thoughts mm-hmm. in the cartel aspect.
Yeah.
They are taught, and that taught aspect becomes natural.
Right.
And that's their natural, even though like it may not be quote unquote right or wrong, they don't necessarily know that.
Here's the thing though, there's a difference in how this plays out with someone that is unregenerate. Like take faith out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I think when you see someone who has come into, like, if they're living a lifestyle and all of a sudden they come face to face with the reality that they are not God
mm-hmm.
and that there is a God
mm-hmm.
and they need to respond to that realization, a lot of these things that we're talking about, convictions, things that they were guilty of but felt no shame about, immediately start changing. They can no longer just, it's not like they're we're the cartel Christians and yeah. we believe in Jesus, but we just also murder people.
Yeah.
Right? Now, they might be Catholic, but that's another story. You see that start changing in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I find interesting? You know who, in my opinion, exhibits the least amount of shame to the people around them?
David Armand.
What'd you say?
David Hartman.
Oh, my goodness. No, who? Nothing? Those who have embraced their sin the most. Not in agreement with it, but in realization of it.
Mm-hmm.
Shame, shaming people. And I'm saying this, I'm about to, you know, throw stones at myself.
Mm.
Shame is shaming people is complete arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Because how arrogant is it for me to think that because someone else does not conform to the controlling standards that I have created,
mm-hmm.
that when they do not comply or conform to them, that I am so important and so, you know, godlike that I have the right to change the quality of their existence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an overly dramatic statement, but that's the picture of what's happening,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And the times that I've been the least like that are when I see the blood on my hands, when I become intimately aware that I am jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
And who am I to cast the first stone? Who am I to look at the splinter in your eye when I have a log in mine? When I'm acutely aware, not of shamed by Christ, but of my need for Christ because of the sin in my life, it provokes a deep humility that says, we're all here together, bro. Like, I get it. We don't want to stay here, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think my crap don't stink, I immediately move to a position of arrogance, right? It may not be overt, but that's what that does. Like, that's...
All right, so I'm going to make a statement that might be a little controversial, but I'm at this point where I don't really care. Everything we just talked about, that whole, all everything,
mm-hmm.
what you just said was perfect for how I see what frustrates me about the church.
Okay.
Because the church does that.
Yeah.
And calls it biblical.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we could get into a lot of theological, well, you know, this, but at its core, it is unhealthy and it is arrogant mm-hmm. to say, you are wrong, I am right, in a sense to where shame is casted onto yeah. them.
Because even if you have a deep-rooted, hermeneutically accurate, exegetically correct understanding of the original Hebrew and Greek applied contextually correct
right.
in that setting and this one, and mm-hmm. you're like, I'm 1,001% sure this is as true as it comes,
mm-hmm.
from God's lips to my lips, mm-hmm. you still don't have the right.
Mm-mm. If to withhold God doesn't love, do it, why should we?
Because when he walked in the garden, he joined them in the mess.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't co-sign it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't enable it, but he helped them get out of it.
Yeah, he didn't abandon them.
So why are we scared to help people out of their mess? Why are we scared of doing that thing where, like, let me help you make the clothes? It's not me co-signing the behavior, but let me help. Why are we scared to do that?
Honest answer. Which is what led to the question. I think it's taught.
Taught?
Like, if I look back at in my life, spiritually speaking,
mm-hmm.
church-wise, growing up through the church, it's pretty well taught throughout yeah. that we are not of this world and that we act like we are not of this world and that we distance ourselves so that they can see the quote-unquote light so that, you know, we help at an arm's distance.
Mm-hmm.
We always make sure that we are acting a certain way, but we never get involved. And people say, like, oh, yeah, but you got to be different. I don't think people understand the radical lifestyle that Jesus had during that yeah. time. Eating with a tax collector is probably.
That'd be like eating with Trump.
Sorry. Jesus probably all
I just pissed off. Yeah, I'm just trying to push buttons.
Jesus may have been kicked out of some churches.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just, we can say it's biblical if we want to, but that's the honest truth. Like, it's,
yeah.
And so when you're casting shame on somebody else, I yeah. get very upset. Like, I get very upset because
I'm going to start casting shame because I want to see Josh Martin upset. I've never seen you upset in my life except when Chargers lose.
Look, I'm telling you, it upsets me to no end. Like, no I've end. Gotten to many arguments when people are shaming other people. Like, you're telling that. Like, what gives you that right?
So, I'm going to give you credit on this one. It's really funny because at the beginning of this, I was like, a little bit of shame is a good thing. And I'm completely on the other end of this now. You've converted me.
Sweet.
for the first time ever.
That's not that's what I'm hearing about. That's what I'm here for.
Here's, I think it is taught. I think it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it might be in our code, right? You put me in the middle of a desert with a group of people, right, and we all live together. Like, because I think this is what we realize. Our deepest, what did we lose in the garden? I'm about to get deep real quick.
Mm-hmm.
What did we lose in the garden? The relationship with God. And if you, and what I believe to be true is, we are forever aware as humans that what we are missing, the purity of the relationship we once had. Like, it's a genetic awareness, right? Subconsciously. And that the relationships we have with people, the people in our lives, are the most powerful things ever, right? We were made for connection. So I think what it is we realize that the most powerful need that we have is love. So it's the most powerful variable I can use to manipulate you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we may disagree on what's right and wrong, but if I know what you crave from me most is my love, and I withhold it, I can control you.
Mm-hmm.
And when I give you my love for behaving the way I want you to, I can conform you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes we do that in extreme ways,
mm-hmm,
right? I've literally, you know, hear patients say, I felt like my dad's love or my mom's love was conditional. It was there when I behaved, and it wasn't there when I wasn't. But I think we all use that, and I think that's what the church does. When you behave, when you walk in and you're dressed appropriate enough, your haircut's appropriate enough, right? You use language that's appropriate enough, we show you love and acceptance. When all of a sudden the skirt's too short, the tattoos are too messy, right? The hair's too long, the language is too vulgar, the drink's too alcoholic, mm-hmm, right? The theology's too questionable.
Yeah.
We shun you, we withhold the spiritual love of that place,
mm-hmm,
as a means to try to get you to come back around.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And that's pure manipulation.
Yeah. And I do think it's taught, but I also think there's something much deeper about it, because it touches, love touches the deepest part of who we are. But I also think, and this is probably one of the bigger misnomers that I hear in circles of faith as to why we're not willing to help Adam and Eve sew the clothes. Because if they don't feel the consequences of their actions, they won't learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so we justify withholding help,
mm-hmm,
or withholding being present in that,
mm-hmm,
because we think we're helping them by entering in the struggle with them. And we're like, no, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and you got to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is I don't innately disagree. Like, we do need to feel consequences,
mm-hmm,
right? They teach us. If I hurt my wife's feelings, I need to know that. Like, I need to feel the separation that creates. But that's because I pushed her love away with my actions. She didn't withhold it from me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's different.
Oh, yeah.
But we teach people, no. Like, we need to withhold it because they need to learn from their actions, which, you're right, is literally the antithesis of what you see Jesus. Literally salvation. Salvation itself is the salvation from the consequences of our actions.
Mm-hmm.
If Jesus had the same approach, we would all enter hell before we entered heaven.
Mm-hmm.
But he literally says, hey, it's not that I'm not going to tell you the truth, or on some level you're going to have to face the truth, but I'm also going to enter into that truth with you and support you through it.
Yeah. I'll leave you with this thought.
Leave me with a thought, because we got to wrap up.
I know. I'll leave you with this thought. And this is going to tie in maybe to David Ortman.
Okay.
I think what we're painting right now is a strong case for Christian universalism.
It's why you got to bring it back to this.
Because this
is... Can we not shelve CU for a little while?
Because I need to say it, because it fits so perfectly to what we've talked about.
I can't even look at you right now. This is totally
shameful.
This is shameful.
Because we talked about it on the podcast, and this is what... This was your question when we talked about it.
I don't like the corner you backed me in.
What did we lose in the garden? I would say we didn't lose the relationship with God. He walked in and he said, I'm still here. And I think shame has created this belief that we are not in some type of relationship with God. That, and so I think, but I think God is telling us, I'm still here. We just need you to understand that. And Jesus is a way to get you there. So I think
because
that kind of...
Even to use some of the Calvinist language of total depravity, I would say total depravity is the awareness that we're not good enough and we need God. Shame says, I'm not good enough, therefore I can't go to God.
Right.
Totally different.
Totally different.
But we often use shame in place of that depravity language.
Right.
One is just a recognition of our position in light of God. The other is saying, I'm not even worthy.
Yeah.
Which is the furthest thing from the truth.
Mm.
You know what? You brought us a solid message today, Joshua. Good work.
I try. It was the coffee.
And again, I really hate the guilt and conviction this has brought into my life and what that may mean I need to do in light of it.
Well, any questions, comments, shoot us texts and emails. Yep. See what we got going on.
Send us a message. We really appreciate it. Yeah. So, all right, guys, until next time, y'all have a wonderful week, and we love you.
Try not to shame anybody.
Behave yourselves.
Holla. Thanks for joining us on another episode of TNJ. Don't forget to check out the links to any of our guests in the show description.
And check out tattoosandjesus.org for additional show information or to submit your questions, comments, or curse words.